Welcome to the KP Podcast, where we talk about the business of real estate. A podcast about leveraging opportunities, growing your business, and experiencing financial freedom. Here are your hosts, Keith Anderson and Peter Kamboukos.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the KP Podcast, and we're coming to you here from the Forum. And look who we got today. It's Keith and I back in the same studio.
I'm back, baby.
First time in a little while. You've done an interview. I've had a couple of interviews, which has been great. We've had some great guests on. But today, we want to talk about a topic that is
sweeping
all over the news today. Hot topic. We got you and me back in the studio to discuss this because you know what? It's coming up with our agents. It's coming up with their clients. Lenders, it's on every big media. It's the hot topic in the real estate industry today. What are we going over today, Keith?
We are talking about LLPAs. Do you know what that means, Pete?
I think that was a band from the early 90s that had that hit song.
No, guys, we are talking about these pricing adjustments that we're seeing in the mortgage space. Guys, This is like you've probably seen stuff through TikTok. We've heard a lot of stuff through Instagram, and people are blowing it out of proportion, or are they? Like, so this is something we want to dive in on a ton today, guys, and just talk about what is really going on, who is actually being impacted here, and why. Because I think a lot of people are just putting the blame game out there right now, and they're yelling across the lines, right? But What is actually happening, and is the perception and the story that's being shared actually the story that might be what's occurring? And so Let's dive into it. What actually happened?
And I think we dive into it. And I think just to let everybody know here, and this is the thing, like, you know, Keith and I were just talking before we went live here. And I think that's what it is just like we're seeing out there, it's not super clear cut. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have different opinions. And I think we got some different opinions in this room. So, yeah, let's get into it. So the loan level pricing adjustment. Okay, so it's making headlines now because media's picked up on it and it's going into effect May 1st. And I guess one thing to be clear for everybody, it's already been in the pricing.
Yeah, for a couple months, guys. Like it was announced a few months ago.
This is announced about 2 months ago. And so shortly thereafter, this is for loans that are being delivered starting May 1st and later. So, you know, it's been in the pricing for at least a month, probably, you know, closer to 45 days to 2 months. So it's already been in there. So that's step one. But what it was is the FHFA. Have trouble saying that one, right? They have adjusted the fee structure and the buckets of what borrowers are paying on conventional loans based on what their credit score is and down payment. So just to break that down so everybody's on the same page. Okay, you've got government-backed loans, and everybody normally thinks about FHA and VA when we talk about that, but people forget that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, who buy almost all of the conventional loans out there, so conventional financing that we're talking about, which is, you know, a vast majority of what people are getting, those are government-sponsored entities, so they're quasi-government entities, regulated and controlled a lot by those government agencies. And so there are fees in there that are paid as part of that loan, it always have been. Obviously, now it's making news because they've changed that structure. And this is to help, you know, people that loans that go bad and foreclosures because they are government-sponsored entities that own these.
They're balanced against risk, typically. Like, that's how they've always structured those fees is, hey, the riskier loans are going to have the higher percentage of cost for pricing because, well, if they're going to take a higher risk loan, they have to have some stuff to insure it a little bit. And so there's a couple things that play in factor. You got the mortgage insurance that's in there that help offset some of that. And then we also have the fact of which loans are most likely to foreclose or to go bad or not be made payments. And so they add pricing to help offset that risk. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's been for a long, long time.
So the part now, let's get to what's been making headlines. So why would something like a fee structure make such headlines and cause such controversy? And you're seeing it plastered all over, you know, CNN and Fox News and MSNBC or whatever. They're all covering it. And the reason is because the fee structure before had it, you've always got different buckets, right, based on where do you fall in your credit score. And so, you know, for example, it's maybe you're between 620 and 640 and you're putting 10% down, you're in this bucket, okay? And so they would have credit score buckets that maybe went from, you know, 580 to 620 and 620 to 680 or whatever they were. And then the same with down payments, you know, 3% down payment, 10%, 15, 20, et cetera. Well, what they did, number one, is they expanded all of those.
Yeah.
So before—
it stopped at 740.
740 was the highest. Now they've broken those buckets out even
yeah, so
all
now
the
they,
way, and all the way through.
Yeah, so they used to have a 740 and above, so that if you broke through 740, your credit score really didn't matter. After that, you were over 740. Mm-hmm. Now that is no longer the case. Now they have a 740 to 760 bucket and a 760 to 780 bucket.
Right.
And now that upper bucket is now 780 and above. Mm-hmm. So that's two more tiers of fee structure that changed distinctively between those buckets.
Yeah,
so it does change a little bit that side.
And there was some going down. I don't have the chart right in front of me, but they broke out some of those other ones, you know, where it might have been like, let's say, you know, 620 to 660. Now it might be like 620 to 640, 640 to 680. So
yeah.
The point is they broke that down even further. You know, so if there was, for example, 5 credit buckets before, now it's like 8 credit buckets or whatever it is. There's just more of them. The down payment side, those buckets or those brackets, I should say, pretty much stayed the same. But what they did expand the credit one. So now we just have more overall buckets that you can fall into depending on your credit score and how much you're putting down. And the headlines have been what, Keith? What have we done?
I would probably say if I'm going to give you the exact headline, it is. And again, it depends on what you're seeing, what type of news story. But some of the ones that I've seen go through TikTok was Biden is attacking the upper middle class and the richest and or the highest credit scores or the most qualified buyers and penalizing them with cost to help make it affordable for everyone in the marketplace. Like that's kind of what we're seeing is that common thread of steal from the rich, give to the poor, make everybody even, balance. Right. That socialist, that dialogue that you see in so many different news stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's screaming, we're in a socialist country, this is what's happening. Like that's what's being shared.
Yeah, you see more of them, you know, government, you know, using higher credit score borrowers to subsidize, you know, lower score borrowers and stuff like this. So basically the whole thing out there is, hey, people with higher scores are getting penalized to help the people with the lower scores. And so what we're going to dive into today is, number one, is that true?
Yeah. Is that true?
Like, is that actually the case and what's actually going on? And what's the good and the bad that could come out of this? Yeah. So, I mean, right off the bat, Keith, what is your take on this? Number one, do you believe, now we've both looked at these charts, we've seen these numbers, we've seen what they've adjusted on there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that's actually what's happening? Is it some version of that? What are your thoughts on it?
I would love to say depends, but—
he's an attorney today.
Yeah, no. So I'm going to actually say no. I'm going to say no for one specific reason. They are subsidizing and attacking a certain bucket of the better credit score people, but not the entire line item of the better credit score individuals. So that's, I mean, the news story is basically like making it sound like no matter what, if you have a higher credit score, your fees just went up. And that is not true. The fees for the upper middle for down payments. So if you're giving between 15 and I think 30% down payments where you typically would, and you're in that 700 and above credit score bracket, your fees did go up, but not dramatically. We're talking about an eighth to a quarter of a point in pricing. That is not a distinctively large amount of money. However, it is enough to make a headline apparently, but it is something there. Now, to offset what I'm saying, the reason why I say it's only certain buckets is the lower down payments for still those high credit score individuals actually went down. So when it comes to 5 and 10% and less down payments, the cost and the pricing for those individuals also went down. So it was benefiting them. So I think the more of the attack was actually attacking more of the people with high-end equity that is actually putting a lot of money down. It's almost steering people towards a loan product. It's helping subsidize the lower down payment products.
Right, which is another part that's in the headlines, which is if we're talking about what's true or not, that's true. So it's if you've got the same score on a lot of those buckets, you're actually going to pay more fees if you put more money down.
Yeah.
Like it goes, it's if you guys think of a bell curve, it kind of goes like a bell curve where if you're putting, say, 5%, let's just say you have a, you know, 720 credit score and you only put 5% down, your fee is going to be lower than if you put 15% down. But then it goes down again. So that's why I say it's like
it's a bell curve.
Now
it's
so
weird.
It's like, it's lower. Like yeah. Like the 5% down gives you a lower fee. Your fee goes up if you're putting 15% down. But then once again, if you go to like 30% down, the fee comes down again.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
I think so at it's 30%, like, it goes to zero for all those boxes. Because remember, mortgage insurance falls off. That's that box. But so, still.
Yeah. So that is true. So same credit score, if you put a little down or a huge amount down, you're going to get better fees. But if you're, guess what? Right where most people fit on that credit score, where you're maybe putting 10, 15, 20% down, where a lot of borrowers.
It's more expensive.
It's more expensive for those folks. So, and so, you know, I would say if you're looking at one thing that people are pointing out is there is, like you said, and I guess to take a step back, so one thing everybody understands, the new overall fee schedule, there is no scenario where somebody with a higher credit score is paying more fees than somebody with a lower credit score for the same amount of down payment. So just to be clear on that part of it, okay, that doesn't tell you the whole picture, but
it helps a little
bit. It helps to clarify what we're talking about, okay? So if you look at the new fee schedule, if you have a higher credit score and you're putting down the same amount as someone with a lower credit score, your fee is lower than that person on the new fee schedule. Hands down, that's a fact.
Yep.
Numbers
no
are
matter
numbers.
The down payment.
Yeah, regardless of the down payment, numbers are numbers. But what people are saying is, yes, but compared to the old schedule, some of these people's fees went up and some people's fees went down.
So it in all reality, if you look at you play devil's advocate with some of those storylines and headlines, you could say, no, like we barely increased this higher down payment upper middle area for credit scores. But what we did is we made it more affordable for everybody with less down payment money, which is also a very true statement. It made everybody with low down payments actually cheaper pricing and fees. And, you know, it's tough because it's all on the perception of the way you take this. Because in all reality, they're just pushing more people to say put less money down or put more than 30%. Like get out of this middle ground bucket, which brings me to my next point, Pete, is like, why would anybody ever do that? Like, why would you tell people not to do a 20 to 25% market spot?
I'll tell you, I want to give, though, an example. And I was looking at this before the show, and this is, and then I'm going to get into your point because I think this shows us kind of what we're talking about. So I have an example here that'll give you guys a feeling of why we're seeing these headlines and what some people are upset about. Okay. So if you have a 740 credit score, and you are putting 15 to 20% down.
Okay.
So you fall in that bucket. On the old fee schedule, you had a fee of 0.25. So a 0.25% is what you were going to pay on that loan.
That's like an increase, like an overage fee. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
That same person now, 740, 15, 20% down, their fee is now 1%.
Yeah.
So their fee has quadrupled. Okay. So it's gone from 0.25 to 1%, up 0.75%. Conversely, on the old fee schedule, if you had a 620 credit score and you're only putting 5% down, you had a 3.5% fee. So a huge fee because you've got a fairly low credit score and you're putting down a fairly low amount. That person now on this new fee schedule is paying 1.75. So that person's fee got cut in half. So you can see both of the things that we're talking about. Yep. In this scenario, you know, the person with the 740 putting more money down, still paying a lower fee than the person with 620 with less money down. But the person who had the 740 with more money down, his fee quadrupled. Whereas the person with the 620 and only five, their fee got cut in half.
It does paint the picture of like, okay, it's kind of a weird conversation. If it costs that much more to put 15 to 20% down, just put 10% down and it's actually
or
cheaper for them
down.
Or put 5% down. Right. So I could take this as an advantage tool potentially and say, okay, well, if you only want me to put 5% down, don't twist my arm. Fine, I'll put 5% down and I'll move that money in a more favorable asset for myself, like another investment or something else. So like you could play a little bit of a battle, but what it's doing is it's attacking this mindset of old of like, I need 20-25% down mm-hmm. in order to buy a house, and it's making it easier to have a lower down payment. And for the longest time in our country, it's always been like no debt, no debt, no debt, no debt. And it almost feels like the government's like, hey, we want you to have more debt. Like, mm-hmm. we're going to make it easier for you to have a larger loan-to-value ratio of debt here.
Yeah, and it is, and that's why they say that. And so you do have, and this is where the headlines and the talk is coming from. So you've got lower down payment amounts. Typically, lower down payments across the board, you know, those fees are looking better for people. But then you've got that group who's got the lower down payment and the lower credit score. And people will go, well, why is theirs improving when we see the other ones that are getting more expensive?
Yeah.
Right. And so you do have, you know, what some people would say is a valid point, which is where do we see most people in the last, say, 8 to 10 years that have fallen credit score wise and down payment wise? It has been in that 720 to 740-ish range in credit score. And putting 10 to 20% down.
So
that is the vast majority of who's been taking out mortgages.
So if that's the case and they raise those prices,
and that's
how much more money did they make?
And that's the group that got the prices or the fees raised on
them. So they can shelter the conversation by saying, we're going to make it more affordable for everybody. Mm-hmm. But the whole point is they know people aren't going to buy those loans anyways. And if you want to get into the crazy conversation of that, if you had low down payment regardless, you're probably going FHA anyways.
Yeah, quite
possibly. Which we haven't even talked about. FHA still might be a more valuable option than a 5% down conventional deal.
Depending on the loan amount,
depending
right?
Depending on the loan amount
FHA,
and the credit score.
And the
loan value ratio. Like all of those ratios come mm-hmm. into play. And typically, for the longest time, FHA has been a more, you know, beneficial asset of a loan program for the lower down payment, lower credit score buyer. These conventional loan programs are trying to compete with that, but then it brings us back to that same question. Like, but are they really? Are they just showing that competition
to
increase fees?
Right? Why should government-sponsored entities be competing at all?
I don't think they are. I think they're just trying to increase the amount of money they're making on that top-end loan basis.
I do think a lot of this is a money grab, you know, where they go, hey, we could take the biggest group and say we're redistributing everything and, you know, helping this group, and we're actually increasing fees on the largest contingent of buyer or what has been previously. But let me ask you, Keith, I mean, what's your feeling here if you go, okay, Mr. Mrs. 620 credit score, 5% down, your fees got cut in half. I can see the argument that says, okay, well, we're helping those people.
And they are. They theoretically are.
But should you be helping somebody with a 620 credit score and only a low down payment? Or should you help them in other ways to go, let's see how we can get that score up
or
maybe save a little bit more?
Or something like that, yeah.
Or if you, I mean, we can really go off the rails and go, how about make it easier to build more housing and then we can fix a lot of this problem if we had more supply? It's like we keep trying to target the wrong side of this.
Yeah.
So,
well, but that's the crazy conspiracy theory that we continue to see. So why aren't they targeting some of those other things that genuinely would help them? And why are they going this method? Like, Pete, what are your thoughts here? Like, if you want to go outstretched arms, maybe something that none of these news stories and all these things are talking about, why the heck would anybody ever do that? Like, to give my old Jim Carrey a good, like, quote, but why would anyone do that? Like, that's crazy.
So, I mean, one of the theories that's out there is, you know, look, I lived through the 08 crash. We were in the business at that time, and we saw there was a push in the early 2000s to get the rate of homeownership up. And the way that they did it back then was to ease the lending standards.
So in essence, if you had a pulse, you get a loan.
And that's what led to if you have a pulse, you can get a loan with the really nice sounding headlines of we're trying to help lower income folks and families that are struggling get into home ownership, and that's the way they chose to do it. Well, everyone knows what happened with that. We people got in to payments they couldn't afford, houses they probably shouldn't have been buying.
Didn't have enough equity
in them. Didn't have any equity. Yeah, enough. Most of the time, nothing.
Nothing. 100% loan type thing.
And so eventually that led to, you know, them going, well, if we're going to let everybody buy a house, well, then the builders are just going to build. We're going to sell all these houses. We led to a huge oversupply housing bubble, and everyone knows a housing crash. A lot of people are looking at this and go, history doesn't often repeat, but it does rhyme. And this kind of has that same feeling. This looks like we're trying to help people put as little money down and have lower credit scores and help them get in the houses.
Okay.
Should we be doing that?
Well,
then because what could that lead to again?
It could lead to another crash, right? Like, that's what we've talked about. However, Pete, this is more my thought process behind this is who benefited from the crash?
Well, I'll tell you, that's when we saw, I mean, if you want to go down this route, that's when we saw the Blackstones of the world and the Cerberuses and all of those guys step in.
So is there a chance that these big conglomerates and these big equity firms that own all this real estate, and they want more real estate.
Yeah, well,
and if you narrow the margin of debt to value ratios on these homes, creating more of a foreclosure potential market if we did spin the other direction, even if we only spend 10%, if there's 5% or less equity opportunities in these homes because people are putting less and less money down because it's not as inexpensive or expensive, and we have a little market correction, does that make inventory more available for these companies that have all the money they want?
It sure would. And I'll tell you what, I mean, we did not see, you know, what we saw is everybody's been panicking the last, you know, year plus here talking about a real estate crash. Those hedge funds did not sell a single property.
They
not one.
They kept them going.
They kept them going. And when you hear them talk about Renter Nation and the long-term plan, and they're buying all those single families and keeping it in there, they're still going. And so who knows? But could that be that they go, yeah, let's help them, these people on the margins get in there, and then that leads to something where they just so happen to have an opportunity to pick up a lot more houses and fill their renters with people that can no longer buy.
Let's keep going down that rabbit hole then, because the Renter Nation, I like that. You know, I think Sports Nation, I think all these other things.
Well, it's a headline that's been out there. So, is the U.S. is becoming a renter nation as people are priced out of homes and, you know, the home ownership rate is lower than what it used to be.
But yeah, so my question is then, if we keep going through little crashes and little off sales and these companies keep buying the houses, at what point does the first time home buyer just really not exist? Like, they kind of jump into like the secondary home buyer where they actually have the money and the equity to do it because there is nothing available for them. And if these big giant companies own all the inventory, guess what? You can't buy a new house because they own it all. So how, they're not selling. So where do you live? You have to either build it custom on land that you purchase or
you've got to keep moving to outskirts cities or different areas, or you're renting. And if we look at...
And they control the rent at that point.
And if we look at what's happened, number one, in this country, in larger cities, but you look, more importantly, don't forget, we're a young country. People forget that. We've only been
in existence for
a couple of hundred years. Look at what's happened in other countries, Europe, Asia, Australia with these, and look at what's happened with housing there. You have home ownership rates that are much lower than what we have here. The vast majority of people are renter nations because they're renting because they can't afford to get in there.
Or there's just no inventory for them to even buy.
There's no inventory. They don't have the mortgage situation that we have here. There's a lot of things that go into it. But you see that. So the blueprint's already there with a lot of that. Now, look, for us in the real estate industry, like you said, if people are out there and they're looking at, is this going to increase the potential for new buyers and sales? Yeah, it is on that side. On the investment side, you know, you started to talk about it before, Keith. Look, I don't like to keep my equity stuck in any of my houses, my primary or my investment properties. And I think the thing for people to think about is you can move the equity and still have the equity. The problem, you know, people think, well, it's safer if I keep, you know, 50% LTV on my primary. No, it's not. Don't give that incentive to the equity, lender. You've got your money stuck in there. You can't get it out. Yeah. When you need it most, you can't get it out.
Yep. Equity is not realized until you buy or sell real estate. Right. You can't, or unless you take a refinance and you pull the money out. There's no way for you to realize that.
And I will give you guys a throwback to one of our early episodes. There's a big distinction, though, what we're talking about, where you saw, like, for example, during that last crash, people doing cash out refis and doing stupid things like buying fancy cars and going on vacations and shopping sprees. Then your equity is gone. But if you simply move your equity out of your home where it's not protected, it's at risk, and you can't access it whenever you want, and move that into a different place, say, I don't know, Keith, an IBC policy where I still have this equity, but now I have full control over it, and it's much safer because they can't get at it.
You're going to die. Right?
All I did.
Like, it's going to happen.
But let's just say I took $50,000 of equity from my house and I moved it over there.
Yeah.
I still have it. I just moved it into account. A different spot.
Yeah.
And so.
And it's accessible at that point.
Correct. Accessible whenever I want.
You could put it back into real estate after
I could
that.
Put it back into the house if I wanted to.
Or an investment property or whatever. And so. So, a cash flowing asset.
But let's tell people, throw back to one of our early episodes. I don't have the episode in front of me, but IBC, Infinite Banking Concept. You guys want to go back to our first season and find that one. We go a little more in depth as to how that stuff works.
Whole life insurance policies.
Keith and I use it. Love it. It's been game changer for us. But that's one of the benefits there is I can just move my equity and have it protected. Right?
I think it brings us to that point of just trying to figure out what this all is about and how it impacts the market as a whole, right? So, Pete, what would be – I'm going to give you a scale of 1 to 10, okay? 1 being no impact at all, 10 being this is the end, like this impacts it greatly. What impact do you think that this is going to have long-term, like I'd say a year plus – on the mortgage or the residential real estate marketplace?
I would only put it at a 4 or 5 because I think it's something people will adjust to. So it will have impact. And I think it will have more impact for the folks at the lower credit scores with the lower down payments to help them get in there. I think what's going to happen at the higher ones is people are going to adjust and lenders are going to adjust. People are going to not like it. They're going to complain about it, but then eventually, like most things, people are going to get used to it and move on.
Yeah.
So it will have some impact here at the bottom. So yes, it's going to impact. That's why I put it kind of middle of the road. But it's not going to be a huge impact where it's going to be a game changer.
And at the end of the day, you'll just adjust how you go about it. So instead of putting 25% down, put 30. Yeah. Or instead of putting 15% down, put 10. Like, well, let's think about that. Like, just put 10.
And where would you put it on the scale of 1 to 10? What do you think the impact's going to be?
I think this is more of a 6 or a 7.
Okay.
Let me tell you why. I think this is a domino effect of what's to come next. I don't think it's this specific item. Again, I think it's the government and these loan programs and these entities testing our flexibility in this type of a model in a market. What's next to come? Like, your question should not be, wow, this sucks. Like, we're going to get over this. Your question really should be, oh my God, what's next? Because if this is what they're doing now at the early stages, if this is their testing the water phase, what is the next phase, right? Like, what's that next envelope of taxation and some of the other things that can happen with the fee structures? This is like the tip of the iceberg, guys. Like,
well, and we've talked about before, you know, things like 40-year loans becoming more and more commonplace.
Trying to help with affordability.
Right. And we've also seen that pilot program in California and Australia with these shared equity programs. You're going to see more stuff like that. Yep. And so you're absolutely right. These is going to lead to more and more of these
domino effect.
Again, but in my opinion, man, the government, and this is what they do in all things, they focus on what leads the headlines, what's the easiest to affect, not what is the correct way to go about fixing this. It's keep putting Band-Aids on it because no one wants to actually fix the actual problem.
So as you guys in the real estate industry, for you guys as investors, let's focus on you guys real briefly. You guys always just need to look at what's happening and strategize. How can you leverage what is being put in front of you to take advantage of it and move forward? Because while the government makes and does decisions and things happen, it's opening up other doors for us to take advantage of them. Because not every story is a bad story, right? Sometimes it looks at the beginning, it affects us negatively. So that's why I say be careful with the news stories and what you're hearing, because they're saying this, 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 and this. But what it also means is that it's going to create more home ownership opportunities for, if you're in the real estate industry, it's going to create more buyers for you. Right. That's going to help more opportunity for your buyers to get into homes and equity be generated. But as investors, it's going to open up new doors for us as well, investing in real estate and doing different properties, because every little thing that happens could be another foreclosure possibility for purchase for us too.
Yeah.
It doesn't change the fact that we also can benefit off of decisions that are made.
And that's what you got to do, right? So, you know, if you got the U.S. government who's doing something, okay, and they are the largest, most powerful entity on the planet, okay, you just guys figure out.
Follow them somehow? Yeah. I don't know.
It's like align yourself on that side. You don't have to agree with them.
No.
And you don't have to do exactly what they're doing, but what you can do is say, okay, how can I take advantage of this for me and my family, my friends, my people that I work with? How are we going to make world life better for us, knowing that this is what they're doing? Because, like I said, regardless of whether you like it or not or agree with it or not, that's what's happening. And so you can cry about it, or you can figure out what you're going to do about it.
It's life's a big puzzle, guys. Like, we have to be learning how to play this a little bit better. As pieces move on a chessboard, we got to move with them, right? Mm-hmm. We got to be aligned. So strategize that way. That's our big focus. We want to bring you guys this headline and just share the whole truth of it, not just what the headlines are saying. Yes, there is some truth to some of the headlines, but there's also a lot of inverse responses that do make sense for other people. It does help individuals in this marketplace. Yeah. So look at it all. But my biggest question I would want to leave you with, what's next? Think about what could be next. If this is a starting point, what do we get next? What do we come back to you guys in 3 weeks with the next podcast with what happens right after this?
Here
so take this note down here in April in 2023 that we said it here first. What's next, guys? It's coming. And we're going to reference back to the starting point. We're going to see things like this happen more and more. Actually, this wouldn't be the first. This wouldn't be the first thing. Now that I think about it, mortgage insurance being reduced on the FHA side.
Yes.
That might have been the initial first domino that fell.
Well, yeah, the FHA approving 40-year loans for the folks that were in trouble, not new 40-year loans.
And but that's a starting point.
Then the mortgage insurance premiums went down. Now we've got this, and there's definitely more.
Pete, haven't we been saying it? We've been saying it this whole time. And so keep in mind, guys, we're going to be at that point. We appreciate you guys tuning in. We're going to see you guys here in a couple weeks. Again, follow us on all social media platforms as we continue to dive into stuff like this. If you guys want us to tackle a topic about anything in the mortgage, real estate, or investment space, we'd love to do that. And we will see you guys in a couple weeks.
See you guys.